Welcome to the Pain Gap Podcast. Join me as I engage with experts, patients, journalists, legislators, and policy experts. Together, we'll explore intersectional health disparities and advocate for accessible, equitable health care for women of all backgrounds. Let's ignite progress and demand urgent action for women's health worldwide. Dr. Somi Javed is a board-certified OBGYN, leading women's sexual health thought leader and menopause advocate. She is the founder and lead chief medical officer of HerMD, a team on a mission to make women's healthcare exceptional by educating, advocating for, and empowering patients to take control of their health concerns. Dr. Javed has been featured in Forbes, Vogue, InStyle, Parents, Refinery, Mashable, Adweek, and PopSugar. In August 2020, Dr. Javed spoke about gender bias and the female sexual health revolution on the TEDx main stage. And in January 2021, she was featured in Women on Top for her work as a trailblazer and pioneer in women's sexual health. Her sister, Comelle Caruso, oversees the strategy and execution of business development, sales, patient experience, and marketing, including branding and content, across all marketing channels. Prior to joining HerMD, Comelle held several marketing and leadership roles within the education and education tech space. Somi and Comelle Javed of HerMD, welcome to the Pain Gap Podcast.
Thank you, Nishna.
You guys embody so much of the core of my work, which is believing women, centering women, revolutionizing women's healthcare. Tell our audience, of course, I already know, and I'm such a huge fan of HerMD, but tell our audience who you guys are and what HerMD is.
Oh, that's such a big question.
I know, right? That's like the question.
Yeah. So HerMD is, God, it's a mission. It is about education, advocacy, and empowering women. We are gynecology, menopause, and sexual health care in an insurance-based system, both brick and mortar and virtual. That's just the mere surface of what we are. Our founding story is so much more. It's a place where women are seen and heard and their partners in their health care. Comelle?
Yeah. And so Somi and I, for those of you who don't know, are sisters, which is pretty cool to be able to work with your sister. And I did not ever think I would work with Somi because she took the medical school doctor route and I took a business route and focused on marketing and branding. But I started to help her, you know, with the initial practice. And what we saw were women coming from multiple states, over 30 states and multiple countries to Cincinnati, Ohio, which I do love Cincinnati, but you know, it's not New York, it's not LA, it's not a destination where people think I'm going to go there for healthcare. But what was created was this amazing space, like Somi said, where women finally felt seen, finally felt heard, and were with providers who could actually treat them for their menopause symptoms, their sexual health symptoms that went on for many of them years and years and years of being dismissed.
Whoa. And these women were facing delays in diagnosis and dismissals and faced the phenomenon of what I call being invisible patients. So HerMD gave them a safe space to have a diagnosis and not be subject to those market delays in diagnosis.
And you guys both also had a very personal link to delayed diagnosis because your own mother had struggled with this. So tell us a little bit about how that, Somi, I know that was very personal and kind of spurring you guys to action.
Yeah, so I'm going to start the story and I'll let Comelle fill in because I have a little bit of a medical view to it. But I was pre-med at Northwestern at the time and got a call from my dad and he said, Somi, you need to come home. And my mom was only 45 at the time. We have a strong family history of cardiovascular disease, particularly in women. But she presented with left arm pain, shortness of breath, and chest pain. And her EKG was abnormal. And I could see that as a pre-med student. But they kept saying, it's too much caffeine. It's your children. And she was in Cleveland, Ohio, which is known for medical tourism, particularly for your hurt. So I watched what the doctors did to her, and I vowed that I would be a different physician. And so they really, you know, decided what I was going to do with my life. I was going to change healthcare for women. And when Kamel witnessed what was going on in Cincinnati with her MD many years later, she was the one that said, let's scale this. So Kamel, do you want to pipe in?
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, and going back to that moment, you know, I was 15 and I was a nerd in high school and I didn't get in trouble. And I remember being called down to come to the office. And I was like, what is going on? And then they filled me in that our mother had been rushed emergently in an ambulance to the hospital. And, you know, I think about that now being 43, she was 45. Wow. And I see my children.
That's crazy.
Yes, I am, I guess. But I think about that. That seems so old to me then. And I think about that now, right? And I think about my children. And she didn't see us before she went into that major surgery. She didn't have time to process. And we as her children didn't get to see her. And so that lives ingrained in us that, you know, we don't want women to have to go through that again and again. And so, you know, flash forward to when I saw what was going on in Cincinnati and all these women coming and we were getting all these testimonials and outreach. And I like my gynecologist, but I don't like my gynecologist that now I like my gynecologist. But before, right? But like before, I would never go out to events with my gynecologist. I would never kind of celebrate the work that they were doing. But because what we do is so special, hundreds of women would come and it was just this outpouring of love because they finally felt seen, heard, and that they weren't being dismissed and it wasn't all in their head. Yeah. And so pretty incredible. And I said, we have to scale this because women shouldn't have to travel so far for this care. We should bring this care to them.
Exactly.
And I think the biggest thing too is my mother was pleading for help for 6 weeks, bouncing in and out of the hospital. It did not have to be emergent. She did not have to be robbed of that time to talk to her family or to make an informed decision. And that to me, it should be criminal because she was robbed of those opportunities. And we were robbed of those opportunities of peace and, you know, wishing her well for her surgery or even to be able to make a decision about the care path. It became emergent and life-saving. And so we had no choice, right? And so that's why Kamel and I are so dedicated. And I think the other thing we always forget about is there's a lot of people making fancy spaces and talking about menopause and sexual health care, and it's hot now. But I think what we also did is really brought to healthcare what providers wanted, which was more time with their patients.
Yes. Yes. Well, talk to me about that because that is so important. And I think that people that don't live in America don't realize, or maybe they do realize since our coverage has been so bad, how fast American healthcare is. And it really is, you know, hospitals are really operating like businesses, please don't sue me, but really is, you know, in and out. How many patients can you see? And listening to women is so important. Not only are we not being believed, but we are not being listened to. When you think about HERMD, I know what range of services, you know, I would think of, but what does it encompass? Because it's not just, you know, it's not just sexual health. And I think what's important that even that name HERMD reminds people is that we are so much more than just a middle-aged white man with a uterus.
I'm going to give you a snippet. Yes. I'm going to give you a snippet of what healthcare looks like right now. And then I'll let Kamel brag on our offerings and what we do and how we do it so differently. But I was teaching a continuing medical education course for physicians, and some of them are down to 7-minute appointments. That's to meet you, get your history, type it all up, talk to you about your options, and do an exam. How? That's why there's delays in diagnosis, right? That's why women are dying. And so we were like, that's the first thing we have to fix. We have to allow people to practice medicine the way they intended and to have time. These are huge decisions that we're making.
Yes.
Right? People's lives are literally at stake. And so her MD has longer appointment times and the providers see less patients per day. Most medical mistakes happen from burnout. If you're seeing 50 patients a day like I was, guess what? You're burned out. You're going to make mistakes. So longer appointment times and then everything under one roof. Kamel, do you want to take it from there?
And so, you know, before her MD, I was not in healthcare. And so I wasn't aware of how truly broken our system was, not only for patients, but also for providers. And so when I would try and get an appointment at my gyno post-baby, it was forever, like months and months. And I didn't understand that, you know, I understand, I have children, pregnant patients take precedence, I get it. Yeah. But what I didn't understand was there are only a limited number of appointments available for non-pregnant patients. I had no idea. And that's why we have to wait so long. And so the average wait time is incredibly long to get an appointment if you're not having a baby. And so then when you finally make that appointment and you get 7 minutes, that's completely crazy. And it's personal. And it's one of the most personal appointments you're going to have.
Yeah, exactly. Well, women, money, power. We need all of that stuff, but so difficult to talk about, so difficult to talk about raising money, asking for money, getting money, and having access to capital. So how did two brown girls, how did two awesome women of color, obviously very smart and educated, raise $18 million in Series A1 funding and then bring your total funding to $30 million? How does that happen? Some people can't even get 30 bucks.
Don't bet against Kamel and I. That's what I'll have to say in life. Anyone who does is not going to win that one. I will say it's mission-driven work. I will say that we were a blue ocean opportunity. No one else is looking at healthcare from both the provider and the patient perspective. And so when you have mission-driven work and you are delivering highly specialized gynecologic, menopause, and sexual healthcare within an insurance-based system, and you're offering it virtual and brick and mortar, and you have surgery and imaging and a med spa all under one roof for convenience, who else is doing that? Even 9 years after we started our first location, no one.
Why is that?
So we oversubscribed. Both rounds, we were oversubscribed, even though they told us we had less than 0.5% chance of raising as two minority women from the Midwest. Kamel, I know you want to say something about this as well. Yeah,
I do. And so beyond all of that, and I think Anusha, you were going to say, you know, why is anyone doing it or something? It is hard.
Why are
it is? Yes, it is hard. I'm not going to lie, but we're a mission driven. So the work, we're so passionate about it. But you take the fact that only 20% of OBGYNs are trained in menopause and sexual health care, and 93% of medical residents come out of an OBGYN residency unprepared to treat menopausal women. And so that's insane. So 100% of HRMD providers are trained, but there's, you know, when you ask for money and you just give people that staggering statistic along with, so there's providers aren't doing it. And 40% of our lives are going to be spent in some kind of menopausal state, whether it's perimenopause, menopause, postmenopause, and 43% of us experience issues with our sexual health and wellness. We have to do something. And so those numbers, when you just lay it out there, that is how we got, you know, people to want to invest in our model of healthcare.
Yeah, I think,
and you know, this is called HRMD University. Yeah. And our outcomes are smashing the status quo. So patients are having this beautiful experience in this very convenient building that takes insurance. We're teaching providers. And then on top of it, our university is now showing at major medical conferences outcomes that are smashing the status quo. So mission, data, providers.
But what else is really important is just a lack of information. I mean, while doing research for my book, The Pain Gap, I discovered, you know, came across the knowledge gap. There is so much little research done on women's health. The fact that menopause is not taught in med school, it is an elective, offered as an elective, that in itself is just insanity. So we've seen so much conversation around women's health research, especially with the White House Women's Health Initiative. How are you guys feeling about increasing research in women's health and closing this knowledge gap? Because it's massive, and I can't believe we waited this long to talk about it.
I think it's about damn time. There's so many reasons that women have delays in diagnosis, but one of the major reasons is because we don't have enough data or research. It's also why there's this huge disparity when you look at FDA-approved medications for men versus women. It's why we can experience 4 years longer in delays in diagnosis, and there's not as many options for us. And so with data, there will be true change in medicine.
Yeah, true change in medicine, and also perhaps one of the worst PR blunders, I think, in the history of anything, but especially healthcare, women's health, was obviously hormone replacement therapy and the link to cancer, which we know now is inaccurate, unfounded, and so much more. Now we have something else to worry about. Some of you look like you wanted to say something. Say.
Well, yeah, but we also didn't share with that study that we studied the wrong patient population. We only studied, you know, the oral formulations of hormone therapy. We studied women 70 to 79, and the representative population that we typically treat that are going into menopause were underrepresented, and that the estrogen-only arm actually had a decreased risk of mortality. If those women developed breast cancer, they had a decreased risk of dying from that breast cancer. And we never shared all the good, the cardiovascular benefit, the bone benefit, the brain benefit of hormone therapy. We withheld this from women. It's crazy.
I can't believe that. No, that is criminal. That is criminal. Because it's not, like, can you imagine if you ever told men, hi, you're going to be, every single one of you is going to be going through this. It's going to take anywhere from 5 to 10 years. Oh, we have a treatment that it's very effective, but there's just misinformation around it. It's absolutely.
We don't think twice about giving men testosterone.
Yeah.
If their testosterone is low, it doesn't matter at what age. If it is low in their 30s and their 20s, people don't think twice about giving men testosterone or withholding hormone from them.
We take their health so seriously. I mean, oh, to be a man and to have a penis. I do always say that in my next life, I want to come back as a South Asian man, because, or just an Asian man, because it's just great. I mean, you're born, you have a penis, and you have already accomplished quite a bit. Especially,
all right, friend, you cannot steal the title of my book, because you know book I'm writing. It's literally going to be called May I Borrow Your Penis, because
I
was having a particularly rough session while I was fundraising and speaking to a bunch of VCs who typically tend to be older white gentlemen. Yeah. And a lot of them are amazing and, you know, are partners in healthcare for women, but a lot just don't get it because they can't understand or empathize, right? And so my husband was walking by and he was like feeling really badly for me. And because I'm trying to pitch and passionate, and he's like, God, is there anything I can do for you? And so like I paused it. I was like, yeah, can I borrow your penis? And he like fell on the floor. And I was like, yeah. So that's going to be the title of my book. I'll be calling you, Nushe, when I need a public.
I love it.
Yes.
Well, I can't steal it now because it's all on camera. The whole brainstorming, the whole birth of the idea. But you know what? But that is also very exciting. Your book is going to be awesome. But that's also really exciting, kind of all this conversation. And last year, I was so excited to see you guys as part of, you know, all the talk and excitement and energy around menopause. Yay for rebranding menopause. But more than menopause, what are you guys seeing in women's health right now that is like you guys are excited about?
I think there's a movement also within sexual health and wellness. And women, obviously, unfortunately, have been treated as what Somi says, two things. Vessels for delivering babies. I have children. Yes, that's wonderful. And objects of male desire. And that is it. And, you know, I talk with my daughter a lot, who's 22, she'll love this, but you know, we talk about sex ed and she's like, yeah, it's like, don't get pregnant, or this is how to get pregnant when you want to. And here's like a condom on a banana, right? And they don't teach you about pleasure, about knowing your body, about what you like, about arousal, any of that traditionally. I am seeing that start to change where women are owning their sexuality. It's not dirty. It's not just for men to enjoy sex. And it's okay to say, I want to know what I like. Pleasure is important. And I'm not going to just be this object for men. What I like and what feels good to me matters.
Yeah. And pleasure is important and natural. And, you know, we were never educated about that. Do you guys remember sex ed?
And it hasn't changed much. It hasn't changed much. I marked up my daughter's little pamphlet that she got about sex ed. The direct-to-consumer brands, there are lubricants, there are vibrators. We are talking about women's sexual health care. There are a lot of femtech innovations beyond medication or surgery for, you know, endometriosis pain. There are new diagnostic tests for early intervention for cancers. So I'm really excited about all the innovation in the space. I'm excited about the accessibility to women. So now there are online educational platforms, there are apps. I'm excited about telehealth. I mean, that's one of the ways HerMD reaches our patients. And so I think bringing healthcare to women, whether it is, you know, with a provider, whether it is education, whether it is a device or a voice, that is what I am excited about. And I am seeing less and less people afraid to talk about menopause. I was watching that new show, and I forgot which streaming series it was on. It was The Swan or The Feud, and they actually alluded to a woman being in menopause. And so now, you know, my kids are like, Mom, they're talking about menopause on TV and in film, you know.
Mom, that's your favorite topic.
Well, it makes me really excited because it's normalizing it.
Yes.
And then women are seeing that and not just trying to relate to someone who may be 20 or 30 years younger. And I think you said, like, rebranding menopause. It's not, I love the Golden Girls, but it's not the Golden Girls anymore, right? It's J-Lo, Shakira, Michelle Obama, Naomi Watts. I don't know all of them are in menopause.
Drew Barrymore, all of them.
Yes, Halle Berry, that age range. You know, the average age is 51. And so 51 today looks very, very different.
Did you know the Golden Girls were supposed to like be in their 40s and 50s? Like, what the heck?
I know. Well, it's like, what?
Father of the Bride. Did you guys see that post?
Yeah.
I felt so old.
Diane Keaton was like 43 in that. What the heck?
She was 5 years younger than me.
Yeah. And they made her look like she was
mom. What?
Old. Yeah. Totally crazy.
Chappelle having lines in that movie. Oh, you know what? She gave birth to the daughter, to the bride. That's it.
Yes.
That was her role. And women are completely changing. We'll not be talking about it, but rebranding, menopause, and all these things about the new menopausal woman. She was always here. We just weren't giving her any attention. And I feel so, I mean, just mortified, but also cannot relate to the centuries of women who just had to shut the F up.
Right. Yeah.
Because everyone was just going to tell them they were crazy and hysterical. And guess what? They were crazy and hysterical, but there was a medical reason behind it. Mm-hmm. You guys are
also so alarming about that. When you look at the WHI and it came out and you saw hormones, like what happened to women, but then doctors and providers stopped learning. No one was teaching us and we weren't prescribing, right? And then what started to go up was the use of antidepressants because people were presenting in menopause and people weren't getting hormones. So then they were getting other medications. So then we were not only not diagnosing, not treating, but then giving women medications that, yes, I prescribe antidepressants and anxiety medicines, but they may have been better suited to have hormone therapy, and they weren't even given that optionality because providers were scared. And I will tell you, they are still scared in some states. We know this because HerMD is in multiple states, and there are places in this country where people literally say, sorry, we don't do hormones here.
Yeah.
Because they still subscribe to the old data.
Yeah. Well, you know, I would ask you if I didn't live in the States, why? But I won't ask you because I live in America. And just the fear around, you know, God forbid, women's health, pleasure, and the fact that it extends beyond abortion is just so scandalous in the United States. I think most people would not believe the kind of stuff that we have to put up with. But what's so interesting about the hormones is I feel like for so long they left women out of clinical trials. Because it'd be like, oh, the hormones, everything's going to be messed up. But guess what? They have completely dismissed hormones. They haven't even studied hormones. So it's like, you can't study us because hormones make everything complicated, but then you're not studying what hormones do. Wait, excuse me, it's really important for women.
Yeah. And the major study that you did, you stopped both clinical arms of and didn't explain really the data to anybody and didn't share the positives, but kind of called a press release and announced that you were stopping the arms of the study and then didn't call a press release with all the subsequent really good full data that came out that it would have benefited both providers and patients. And so that is truly the travesty. You had healers that were not able to heal as they weren't given the tools, the knowledge, the education to treat a population of patients that are going to spend 40% of their lives. Kamel said, 40% of our lives are going to be spent in a menopausal state. And we're graduating 93% of medical residents with the inability to take care of this patient population. It's maddening.
It's maddening. And you also think about just how many women's lives have been lost or unfulfilled because, I mean, just, I think people also need to do deep dives into estrogen. Everybody should read books on estrogen. I don't think even women understand how important, how powerful, and how needed estrogen is for everything, including brain fog and brain functionality. Mom brain might just be an estrogen issue. Did we ever think about that?
Women are losing their jobs. Yeah. Women are losing their marriages. Women are losing their sex lives, their partners. Because of menopause, I gave a keynote at the Global Wellness Summit and I had someone come up to me and he was like, oh my God, I think I lost my marriage because of menopause. And, you know, the anatomical changes that happen, genitourinary syndrome of menopause, and then sex becomes painful, and then there's no libido, and he mistook it as rejection, and she didn't know that this was going on. And he was like, I wish we would have met you a year ago. And Kamel and I, that's the mission. That's the story we heard. Those are the social media posts we got, and why people were coming from 35 states to Cincinnati, Ohio, was because we were offering a diagnosis and a care plan within an insurance-based system for these topics that women had just been told, oh, you're not going to die from that. Well, but you might lose your relationship or your job. Kamel, do you want to talk about that UK study that helps us both?
Yeah, I mean, several years ago, I think it was 2 years ago, the UK is, I think, markedly ahead of us. And we're just catching up in terms of menopause education, care, awareness, et cetera. But they did a study, 900,000 women in the UK workforce left due to menopausal symptoms. And so we're being sidelined by brain fog, incontinence, because they didn't know how to get treatment options. They didn't feel comfortable talking in the workplace about what they were going through. So they left. And the New York Times put out an article, lost productivity, menopause cost women in the U.S. $1.8
billion.
Billion dollars. And there are treatments. That's the travesty. There's the lack of education. There was the shame and stigma, so women didn't talk about it. And then there's a lack of understanding that there are treatment options, but there are so many, from over-the-counter to, you know, medications to minimally invasive procedures. There's so much that can be done.
Yeah, we have the solution.
Medications are not all hormones, too. There are FDA approved non-hormonal treatment options for menopause, for sexuality. There are so many options. Mm-hmm. But I've had patients say to me, well, I don't want to have a hot flash. There's not a cooling room. You know, there's lactation rooms, which are amazing. I love that. Yeah, but there's not a cooling room.
Wish I had them. Yeah.
A cooling room. I just actually, I have a senior in high school. She's my middle one. I also have a senior in college. And we were doing recently a college tour. And they don't call it a meditation room. I forgot what they call it. But basically, it's a darkened room where you can go in. You're not allowed to use your cell phone other than to listen. Like, you can't talk. But they have this between classes so that they can meditate, they can calm down, they can focus. I'm like, we're doing this in college campuses, but we're not doing this at employee sites, right? Or employers aren't doing this. I'm like, how nice would that be? Like, we could call it a menopause room. We could call it something else. But we're a room where you would have access to a bathroom, the temperature would be ambient, you know, and where you could take a moment to collect your thoughts, particularly if you have brain fog. And women are complaining that there's not enough bathrooms. And so if they're struggling with incontinence because of GSM or there's no bathrooms on their floor, they don't want to go to work. And so that leads to that $1.8 billion in lost productivity.
Yeah, putting the dollar amount, the economic impact of women's health decisions. Turning gears a little bit, so much talk about work-life balance and, of course, being wellness at work, I guess you could say. What are your guys' key tips on working together? Because you are sisters. How do you stay professional? How do you not reach over the conference table and say, I'm going to tell mom what you said?
That might still happen. No. Our mom is very strict. I don't know if she ever want to hear what some of our meetings
are. Yeah.
Oh, you know, they see moms, man. They're tough.
For me, working with my sister has been one of my biggest blessings. She challenges me to be my best. I know she's always got my back and my voice. She knows my voice very well. She knows things that I would do medically and things I would not stand for medically. And when you both are just so profoundly affected from a personal story and you almost lose your mother because of the brokenness of our healthcare system, and you're both so moved by mission, it makes it really easy. Now, do we disagree? Absolutely. Are we vocal about it? Absolutely. We're both two very strong, intelligent women, but I'm better with her. Like, I love taking the stage with her. I love being in meetings with her. I love when she challenges me. She keeps me on my toes and she helps people see the best version of me. So honestly, I love working with her.
Oh, I love that. Oh, man. What are you going to say to that, Kamel?
What am I going to say to that? That was all very, very true. And I was going to make a joke, but like, honestly, I also stay in my lane, you know, like I'm not a doctor. I pretend to be one on TV. No, but no, I'm by proxy. I understand, you know, a lot more. And she has taught me so much, but I'm not that person. And yes. That makes it easy, right? I'm like, I know this. I don't know this. You are the expert here. So you tell me what is right. You educate me on this and help me to understand. And then I can take what I need from it and you know, do the marketing, do, you know, the PR, the branding, the content, et cetera. And the other thing is trust. You know, trust is so important in the workplace. And even if you disagree, even, you know, if you don't have the same opinion about how something should go or launch or whatever, you know, at the end of the day, that person has your back no matter what. Okay. And, you know, and you have that inherent trust. And so that is something that's pretty priceless. And it's like, who can you trust no matter what?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I think speaking funny, because we both said some serious things on the weekends and barring emergencies, because we are in healthcare and emergencies happen. But so I want to say, barring emergencies, work is off limits. So, like,
awesome.
And we will call each other on it. And so will our spouses, because they're like, enough.
Really important. I would totally talk about work all the time. Yeah. I do, and I don't even work with my husband, and I talk about work all the time.
It's hard not to, but you have to keep that separation.
It's so important, boundaries.
Otherwise, Otherwise, you will go crazy if it's just, you know, work 24/7.
Fight more too. right? Because then there's like, there's no separation. There's never a break. It's like hanging out with your, that coworker that just won't leave you alone.
Well, Mel and I have a lot of fun outside of work. So there's a lot of stuff.
You.
We love to travel. We love food. There's a lot of other stuff to talk about. Yes.
I'm sure you guys are. Actually, I will vouch for that. They are a lot of fun. It's not just a rumor. Okay, last question. You can see how fun they are. Last question. Women's health so big this year, election year in the United States. What is the most important women's health issue to the both of you this year? As America implodes. I'm just kidding.
As America implodes.
My God. I think for me, I'm going to say accessibility. We're watching all of these people in the headlines who've got cancer, and cancer at a really young age. And I want people to have accessible care. And I want us to move from a country that chases disease and treats disease to preventing disease. And we have tools and technology. It's just not accessible.
Yes.
Oh. So I'm going to say election year, women's reproductive rights are very, very important to me. I mean, I will say when the Alabama ruling went down and IVF was being, you know, called out, my daughter who's 22, I mean, I had these thoughts with my daughter who was 22. So I went through IVF. Mm-hmm. And I still have an embryo. Oh. And I got it done. I got it done in Ohio, not Alabama. But you sit there and you think, like, all those women who can't have children, they want to go through IVF, but now they're scared. Or women who have gone through IVF and, you know, they have embryos and they're not sure, right, what they're going to do. Are they going to be held liable? Are they going to be forced to have those children? Are those embryos going to be implanted? Who knows? So my daughter called me and she's like, Mom, what are you going to do? Are you going to move that to New Jersey? And I don't, it's such a scary thing. And I'm lucky that I'm educated and I'm aware and I have the means to be able to do what I would need to do. But you think about all these women who don't even know. Right? It's scary.
And also how hard they already struggle.
Yes.
And the journey is already wrought with so many highs and lows and disappointments. And it's like this is the last thing really any IVF couple or family needs.
Yes.
Did you want to say something, Somi? It seemed like you had something very enlightening to say, and then you decided to hold it back and save it for your next investment meeting. Or your next meeting with your book agent. You guys, I could talk to you forever. Let's have our own podcast, Her MD Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me. And thank you so much for the work that you guys do.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
So much fun. I love us. We're so funny. Talk to you guys soon. Bye.
Sounds good. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining me on the Pain Gap podcast journey. Keep the conversation going by following along on social media for updates and insights. You can visit my website to learn more about the podcast and order a copy of my book, The Pain Gap, to delve deeper into the issues we've explored together. If you're passionate about women's health equality and would like to get involved, please email me. Together, we can close the pain gap in women's health and drive positive change in healthcare. Until next time, stay informed, stay empowered, and keep advocating for a healthier, more equitable future. Thanks for listening.